from DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
A whole bunch to get into on the show today. I'm really excited to have you with us, and I'm also really excited about what's going to happen on Thursday. And for those of you that maybe have not found out this yet, maybe you have not made plans to be with us yet, I'm hoping that you will really mark your calendar down for tomorrow, 6 to 8 p.m., there at the brand-new Kroger Marketplace up Georgia 400 in Cumming on Bethelview Road there as we do our Dog Nation season kickoff. This is going to be one of the biggest events that we'll do all year long. It's one of the most fun things we do each and every year. This year going to be no different on that. We'll have the special off-air Q&A. Jeff Sintel going to be there. Chip Towers, Mike Griffith going to be on hand as well. They'll kind of answer your questions. And these guys get a little loose-lipped during these kinds of events. Some of the things they haven't had a chance to write about, maybe don't feel as fit for broadcast consumption like the one we're doing right now. They'll tell a lot of secrets behind the scenes of the Zamir White injury, behind the scenes of the 2019 recruiting class, all of that tomorrow starting at 6 p.m. at the brand-new Kroger Marketplace there in Cumming. It's called the Crow Bar. That's sort of the unofficial name for it. There is a bar right in the center of Kroger, and we're going to hang out there, have sort of a special kind of happy hour type environment to sort of kick off the 2018 season. We can't wait to see you there. But wait, that's not all. For those of you who do get a chance to come, and look at that picture if you're watching on video of the four of our ugly mugs there on the screen. But for those of you who are watching right now on video, I'll also tell you, and for those of you listening as well, one of the other cool things about what's going to go down tomorrow night is the Dog Nation Retaliation t-shirts, the popular t-shirt that celebrates the 28-7 final score back in Atlanta in December. We're going to give some of these away tomorrow while supplies last as well. So Dog Nation on hand tomorrow for the Dog Nation season kickoff at the brand new Kroger. It's 5550 Bethelview Road in Kroger from 6 to 8 p.m. I love seeing you there at the Crow Bar for that. So come hang out, have a cocktail with us as we celebrate the start of the 2018 season in style with our Dog Nation season kickoff. Now, with that in mind, we'll sort of fast forward a bit here beyond the 2018 season kickoff, and let's talk for a moment about the 2022 season kickoff. It was announced yesterday that Georgia is going to play Oregon in the 2022 Chick-fil-A kickoff there at their Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Now, I got a lot of thoughts on this. I did think it was kind of interesting. Oregon is sort of already tweeting about this. They put out kind of a funny Twitter video message. We'll show you some of this on the screen here. It's kind of one of these deals where it's like, you know, the Oregon Duck mascot apparently sort of texting back and forth with Auburn, who Oregon's got a matchup with coming up, and some of the other teams. And kind of Harry Dog is sort of in there as well. And at one point in time in this video, so Harry Dog says to the Oregon mascot, he says, "Sup," with the question mark, which is how the kids say, "What's up?" And they sort of go on this exchange about playing each other. And at one point in time in the video, the Oregon Duck says, "Just don't forget to bring the breadcrumbs." Now, I'm not cool or hip. I'm the least cool or hip person in the world. I assume this must be some sort of youth slang that I don't know anything about. Luckily, I do have a young, cool, hip person who works on the show with us every single day. It's Connor Riley, and I was hoping he could explain to me what the breadcrumbs line meant in this particular Twitter video, and I'll make sure I put a link to this when I post the podcast at DogNation.com later on today. And Connor said he was also befuddled by what this message was. I guess the consensus in the room here, and maybe Michael Carvel can weigh on this as well, ducks eat breadcrumbs. Is that the issue here? Is that what we're thinking? This is like the duck saying that he's going to eat breadcrumbs. But nonetheless, Oregon's sort of already talking about this on Twitter. I think Georgia fans kind of excited about this as well. I know that Chip Towers at DogNation.com said that he would have preferred to see Georgia-Oregon at Sanford Stadium as a part of a home-and-home series between the Dogs and the Ducks. I don't disagree with Chip on that. I also sort of agree with the conventional wisdom here that while I prefer home-and-home non-conference games to start the season, the Notre Dame trip last year was one of the most exciting trips for me, really, of my lifetime. Seeing the Irish in Athens in 2019 is going to be a big thrill as well. While I like all of that stuff, I think there's a certain degree to which you have to play defense on this game in Atlanta. And by that, I mean you've got to put yourself in the Chick-fil-A kickoff, you know, like Georgia's going to do in 2020 against Virginia, like it's going to do 2022 against Oregon, just for the simple purpose of not letting some other team come and be there. You know, when Auburn comes in, when Alabama comes in, Clemson's been there before, that becomes a showcase commercial for the program in a very big city, and Georgia being in that game just sort of prevents another Southern power from being there. I guess I'll also say when it comes to the Chick-fil-A kickoff, I'm a big fan of this event. I love the fact that this kind of thing's always sort of been a hot ticket. Auburn, Washington this year as a number 6 team, number 9 team, there's some cachet to that matchup. But, you know, the more this game kind of gets away from big-time SEC team versus big-time ACC team, which it seemed to be for a long time, I think the game does start to lose some of its luster. I mean, I don't mind Georgia versus Oregon, but there's absolutely no history between the Dogs and the Ducks. I don't mind Auburn versus Washington this year, but there's no history between those two programs. And frankly, Auburn and Washington, or I should say Auburn, let me try that one more time. Washington, Oregon teams like that are frankly not going to travel very well down here. It ends up not being quite the same intensity of atmosphere that you would get from some other opponents. Now, I will say that what I'm more excited about than the Georgia-Oregon game is the rumor talks between, like, say, Georgia and Texas. I know the Athletics had some reporting on that. I guess Chip Brown over on the Texas side has had some reporting on that as well. That's the kind of thing that gets you excited. Being in a home-and-home environment against one of those big league, name brand, major opponents, I think that's something that you really like. The Georgia-Oregon, though, as a way to kind of keep Georgia's trend of playing big-time opponents to start seasons, I don't mind that either. I think one of the things that Kirby Smart would say is it makes these summer practices a little easier. When you're not thinking about Austin Peay, but thinking about a game against a Big 12 team, like, or I should say a Pac-12 team like Oregon, which has played for national championships before, been in the college football playoff before, I think it makes the energy of the early summer practices a lot easier, and a lot easier to get motivated. And it's just fun to see Georgia on big stages. We won't see that in week one of the 2018 season, but in seasons to come, it seems like we're going to see a good bit more of that, and I think that is good news for UGA fans. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us, whether you watch us on video live at 10 a.m. Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. We love our friends in the Classic City, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player there on the Android devices, WorldFamousDogNation.com. We post the show each and every day. Of course, SoundCloud, pretty much wherever podcasts can be found. You can find Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We really appreciate that. And thanks to Marco's Pizza for making the show possible as well. And I would invite you to take advantage of the great everyday offer that our friends at Marco's Pizza have. It's authentic Italian-quality pizza, and it comes at a great price. Two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. It's every store, every day, the Italian way. So say hello primo by going to Marco's.com. and finding the Marco's nearest you and taking advantage of what I think is really great-tasting pizza at what I know is an outstanding price. It's Marco's.com. You can find out more about the great offer that Marco's has for you. And, of course, we really appreciate Marco's Pizza being a part of our program. We are going to get Mike Griffith here in just a moment. As I said before, Mike's going to be a part of our Big Dog Nation season kickoff tomorrow night, starting at 6 p.m. at the Kroger there in Bethelview Road in Cumming. Really excited about that. And when we get with Mike on the program today, we'll also deal with a lot of the kind of hot-button topics that have been going on around the Georgia program. We're obviously thinking a lot about running backs right now in the wake of Zamir White's injury and kind of what happens with guys like DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield, who both met with reporters yesterday for what I thought was a very spirited conversation. You can see video of that at DogNation.com. We'll talk to Mike about the quarterback situation. You know, Chip was very emphatic about his opinion on that when he spoke on Monday. We'll find out how Mike is sort of seeing that battle between Fromm and Fields right now. Those are the big topics that sort of everybody's sort of dealt with when it comes to a Georgia. But I also noticed this. If you want to go back and sort of look at the aftermath of Saturday's scrimmage for UGA, there are also a few underlying issues that seem to be floating around the program right now for a bit, too. And I think this is really interesting. So what I took a look at is what I think are as five unanswered questions still facing Georgia. And what you're going to see here before we're done is that these five unanswered questions sort of lead to a theme about one really big question that Kirby Smart seems to be coming back to over and over again. Let me explain what I mean by that. Let me start on the Georgia secondary. And I've told you before that when I look at, you know, the thing that, you know, could sort of make or break Georgia and what could be a national championship season, I keep coming back to that secondary. And I keep saying over and over again that we think we know and feel very good about the one cornerback, DeAndre Baker. We think we know and feel very good about the one safety, J.R. Reed. I'm a big believer in Richard LeCount, despite the fact that he's been talked up a lot so far this offseason. You know, we think we know about, you know, somewhere between 40, 50, 60% of the secondary. But there's still a big issue to be settled at cornerback, and there's still a big issue to be settled at that fifth defensive back spot, which is called the star position. And even after the Saturday practice, the second scrimmage, which is sort of a pivotal moment for the summer practices, those sort of issues facing the secondary, as Kirby Smart explains, those issues still remain.
We're trying to hone in, but I don't know that the question's been answered. I thought today we gave up less vertical passes than we did last time, and we threw it more often. So we made more plays down the field. Can I tell you who the two starters are, or the starter opposite Bake? Probably can't tell you that right now because I don't know. I'll say this, Tyson Campbell played better today than he did last time. Stokes has played well. Mark Webb, now that he's back healthy, has played well. But the star position is probably completely unsettled.
With all due respect to Stokes and Webb, who may have great season this year, what Kirby says right there about Tyson Campbell I think is incredibly good news. Georgia needs five-star players to play like five-star players, and if Tyson Campbell can give that kind of freshman contribution to UGA here this year, that's good news to the UGA secondary, even if we don't quite yet know about the star position. We don't quite yet know about who that true starter at cornerback is going to be. And unsettled issues on defense may be a bit of a theme. Kirby says that about the secondary. You can also say the same thing about the defensive line as well. Now, we as fans think we know and like those starters. We feel pretty good about that front group, but maybe the depth beyond that, maybe still yet to be determined, especially with the limited number of players that Georgia can take to South Carolina. Here's more of Kirby Smart on the defensive line.
We do defensive line by committee. So if you're asking me who's on the committee, there's about eight guys on the committee. And there's a bubble there on the D-line where we'll probably travel 8, 9, or 10, depending on special teams. And there's some guys right on that threshold. Some tough decisions to make because, you know, we can only travel 70 in the SEC. You don't want to be practicing guys in positions and they can't go to Columbia.
So here's the reason why I'm doing this topic right now. Listen very closely to what Kirby Smart's saying. He's telling you on Saturday what we'll be watching for between now and September 8th when Georgia goes to South Carolina. That bus on the way to South Carolina by rules only holds 70 people. And if you're taking 8, 9, or 10 defensive linemen, that just becomes less space for other guys on that bus. And the offensive line's very much kind of the same way here. If you want to have the depth that you need to play, you're also taking a spot away from somebody else who might be able to contribute on that short roster for the road game because the situation along the offensive line, as Kirby Smart explained, is not that different from the defensive line. It's all about getting down to 70 for the South Carolina game. Here's Kirby on the other line of scrimmage.
The big battle's kind of going on at who is the next guard besides Ben and Kendall. And is the next guard better than Kendall? Is Kendall the better backup guy that can play all five? There's a lot of competitions going on. So clarity will come when I watch this tape, and I'll know at least a little bit more to who's going to be the guy, but that competition is thick. And the big problem is we're probably going to travel 10 O-linemen, and who the ninth and 10th are is where the battle is.
Jeff and I were at Augusta last night for the Augusta Bulldog Club. We were driving back. We actually talked a lot about this subject. To me, it's one of the most interesting things happening around Georgia right now. It's not going to get as much attention as Fromm versus Fields or the running back situation because those are sexier, more bold print names. But it's never been this hard to sort of whittle the Georgia roster down to 70. And those choices of those final two offensive linemen or the seventh and eighth defensive linemen, that is where the real battle goes here because there's a big difference between being on that bus, eligible to play in that South Carolina game and back in Athens forced to watch it on TV. And I think Kirby's doing his part to sort of foreshadow that right now, that it's really that issue below the surface that's the maybe the most important. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment here, but let me sort of step away for that for one more of my unanswered questions still facing Georgia. We don't talk a lot about specialists here on this program. We probably don't talk enough about Rodrigo Blankenship, who's one of the nation's best. We sometimes don't talk a lot about punters, but I'm a big believer that punter is a pretty important position. I talked earlier in the week about Georgia being third in the country last year and special teams efficiency because of the field position that it was providing for its own offense and sort of punishing its opposing offenses with a year ago. You don't get to that without a good punter. Georgia's was staging a competition for one of those right now. I believe that competition's eventually going to be won by the freshman punter, Jake Camarda, but apparently, according to Kirby, that question is still very far from being answered as well in a competition that may still be a long way from being over. Here's more from Kirby on another unanswered question facing UGA.
Well, I would have said going into the scrimmage, Camarda was the lead and had done pretty well. And today's numbers show that it was not quite as one-sided for Camarda. He had a bomb and then he hit a shank. So he was 50-50 and his yardage was good, but it was because he hit a bomb and a shank and some other mediums. Landon Stratton hit a couple good punts today, but for the most part, it's been Camarda in the lead.
So let me sum all this up. We are battling out for these final roster spots. The one punter who will likely see contribute. The 10 offensive linemen who could be a part of a travel roster. The 8, 9, or 10 defensive linemen. The secondary guys and the backups to them who can also sort of participate in punt coverage and field goal and kickoff coverage. This is what this all leading towards for South Carolina. It's a tough spot for Georgia to be in as it whittles down its roster. And of all four of the unanswered questions I've just dealt with, that sort of final remaining unanswered question that maybe the biggest of all is, who are the 70 players most deserving to go to South Carolina? Kirby Smart talked a lot about that on Saturday, and that's a big issue to deal with between now and September the 8th.
We'll have guys that compete throughout every week. So the difference is how many you can travel. So at home, we may dress 90, 95 guys. So they're going to be out there, but we can only practice so many. So when you think about going on the road in the SEC, you're always trying to work around that 75, 80-man roster because you can only take 70. So you're preparing your team so that your backups on special teams are on the bus.
So listen, I think that this is sort of falls into the category of good problems to have for UGA. You want to be this deep. You want to have tough decisions to make, but it makes the level of practice very intense, and it makes what's happening sort of below the surface with those sort of backup positions all the more important. Remember, for a lot of reasons, the offensive and defensive linemen don't necessarily have a lot of special teams value. That's why those backup cornerbacks, backup wide receivers become crucial because of all the different ways they can impact your special teams. And I think that Kirby Smart's being very blunt and honest in his assessment on that. And as we sort of head towards the start of the season, September 1st, and that first SEC road game, I think these are big, big questions to sort of seek answers to. That's why I'm glad we've got Chip Towers and Mike Griffith on the scene. Speaking of Mike Griffith, he joins us right now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Mike Griffith, loving your coverage of the Georgia Bulldogs there at DogNation.com. It has been quite a spirited summer, to say the least, as we sort of head towards the start of the season here on September 1st. We appreciate you being there for it every step of the way, and thanks for being back here today on Dog Nation Daily this morning. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Brandon.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, obviously we're still sort of reeling from the injury to Zamir White on Saturday and kind of where Georgia goes from there at the running back position. But yesterday was kind of an interesting day towards the next step in that process. You had a chance to speak to DeAndre Swift. You had a chance to speak to Elijah Holyfield. I've seen both those videos at DogNation.com. I've read your reporting on that. What did you think of these two running backs yesterday getting a chance, I would imagine, to meet them both for the first time there? And their demeanor as they get ready to now step into an even expanded role, now that Zamir White's not going to be healthy and playing, what did you make of Swift and Holyfield yesterday?
Well, I mean, they're confident and they're ready for their opportunity. And BA, I got to tell you, I know the Zamir White injury is affecting fans and everybody that was in love with the five-star, but the team's moved on. I mean, Zamir White wasn't going to be an impact running back this season. James Cook has outperformed him every step of the way. He's the freshman everybody's talking about. I've spent this morning just looking at this high school film of him. I'm just mesmerized because this isn't North Carolina high school he's running away from. This isn't somewhere out in Iowa. These are South Florida Division I players that James Cook is absolutely tearing through in this high school highlight. And to hear DeAndre Swift and Elijah Holyfield and DeAndre Walk, everybody is raving about James Cook. I think he will have a more productive freshman season and a bigger impact than Swift did for Georgia last year.
That's pretty high praise there, because obviously we all saw DeAndre Swift in a limited role last season. Obviously Sony Michel and Nick Chubb are going to get the lion's share of the carries a year ago, but Swift showed those flashes of what made him such a highly regarded recruit in 2017. And Mike, I guess what this comes down to is this is the reason why you recruit at the level that Georgia's trying to recruit at, so that you can withstand an injury to a guy like Zamir White, who I know a lot of Georgia fans were really excited about seeing, and I certainly had high expectations for as well. But this is why you recruit elite backs like Holyfield, elite backs like Swift. You're praising James Cook right there, who's certainly sort of drawn some compliments as well for the limited windows people have seen him work in so far this summer. This is why you recruited that level, correct?
I mean, it's one five-star out and one five-star in. I mean, what really separates a five-star running back in North Carolina from a five-star running back in South Florida? Now, Zamir was bigger, but the competition level he faced was not on par. I mean, if you get a guy that's running away from people in South Florida, that is the best high school football in the country, bar none. The numbers bear that out. And, you look at Cook's pedigree, the younger brother of Florida State's all-time leading rusher. And the thing you hear from the player, listen, when the recruiting guys talk about it, it doesn't mean anything, okay? I don't mean to insult, but when I say I'm talking about rankings, if Jeff Centel goes and watches somebody, that's different. I've known Jeff. Jeff is an accurate recruiting reporter. He knows football. He can evaluate. But when I just see some guy giving somebody stars because he's got an offer from this place or that place or went to this camp, that doesn't mean as much as when you put your eyes on the guy. And I'm telling you, anybody that's seen James Cook that was at that open practice, he blew it up that day. But here's the real litmus test, BA. When the players are talking about him,
yeah.
When the teammates are saying he's unique, he's super. I mean, DeAndre Walker said he's like Sony Michel, only faster. Listen, these older players, they don't want to praise these 18-year-old kids. These kids haven't gone through all the wars, all the workouts. They're not veterans yet. So when an older player is praising a guy like that, you better believe he's something special.
So let me bring up one more point on Zamir White here, and I thought you wrote something really interesting about this over the weekend. Now, Mike, a quick backstory here. On Monday's show, I was emphatic. I want Zamir White on punt coverage because I want the 11 best players in the field for every single play. I believe White's likely one of those on most, you know, playing opportunities. And I want Georgia to practice hard the way that it plays. So I've got no problem with Kirby Smart's decision-making on that whatsoever. But sort of with that as the backdrop, you wrote something kind of interesting, that, and we just dealt with this for a few minutes before you joined us, that a big issue for Kirby Smart right now is the small number of people you can put on the bus to take to Columbia to play South Carolina. You can only play 70. And for most of the freshmen, if they don't have the ability to sort of contribute and participate in some sort of special teams role, they might have been, you know, just not on that bus to go there. And you said don't be so quick to assume that Zamir White wasn't in that same boat of needing a special teams role to ensure himself a place on that bus, given the depth that Georgia has at running back. I was hoping you might expound upon that point just a little bit more.
Yeah, he's not one of the top three backs, right? He wasn't one of the top three backs, maybe not one of the top four. I think Georgia has two tailback positions. And, you know, Holyfield was talking yesterday about how him and Swift don't really compete. And, you know, they're a duo. You know, like Michelle and Chubb, I think there's like a 1A and 1B running back position. That's why I said Cook is in that Swift role. Now, Zamir might have been the number two or number three inside the tackles back, but he was fighting to make the team. He was fighting to make the 70-man travel squad. It's like I said, you want Georgia just to bring him and say, oh, go stand on that box over there, Zamir. You're not one of the top three running backs. You can't contribute on defense. But go stand on that box so everybody can say, oh, look, there's the number one running back. He's not playing, but he sure looks good in a uniform. Listen, the guy was still trying to come back. He still had a knee brace on. A running back with a knee brace? It doesn't look right. It was there for confidence. It wasn't there because the knee wasn't strong enough, but mentally he was not back to what he was in high school, and he was trying to get in foot back in that football mindset. Kirby was trying to give him a chance to make the 70-man travel squad, and he was competing. He was out there competing. So nobody should say, listen, this is Georgia now. This isn't like back in the day when he said, oh, boy, they got, you know, 13 guys that are really special and the other, you got to hope the other 72 stand up. No, there's a five-star every time you turn around, you bump into one. Everybody's good. Like you said, I mean, Zamir White, they got another five-star waiting to replace him.
Yeah.
And again, I'm telling you, he wasn't being replaced. Cook was going to be a bigger factor than Zamir White this season. Zamir White was not back, Brandon. People got to get it through their heads. The ranking did not equate to the level of play that we saw in the open practice.
Well, that's certainly very interesting. We'll watch how that plays out in Zamir's case for years to come, and certainly James Cook maybe sooner rather than later. Let me shift gears and talk about a different subject here for a moment. You wrote a column the other day that I completely agree with about the Georgia-South Carolina game. And, Mike, my opinion on South Carolina is somewhat complicated. I think that South Carolina is probably better, apparently, than some do, because I think the Gamecocks should have been ranked in the preseason top 25. They weren't in the coaches or the AP poll. I think that's probably wrong. I think Gamecocks probably a top 25 team. As a comparison, I think they're likely better than Mississippi State, for instance. But in terms of being a real threat to Georgia on September 8th, I don't see that. I think Vegas is likely to make Georgia about a 15-16-point favorite there in that game. I think Georgia likely wins the game by about 3 touchdowns. So for, and you referenced Andy Staples from Sports Illustrated, I think it's wishful thinking on the part of many of the national media, not because they hate Georgia, but because they're just looking for a sexy storyline. I think it's wishful thinking that somebody like South Carolina can rise up and challenge Georgia early in the season. Georgia may get challenged, you know, LSU, Auburn are certainly examples where that's maybe likely to happen. But, Mike, I don't see it from South Carolina, and it sounds like you feel very strongly the same way.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm starting to feel the trend now that people don't really believe in Georgia. It's a bunch of lip service. You know, but, oh, yeah, look at Georgia. They don't really believe, though, because all you got to do is look at the preseason All-SEC team. There wasn't anybody from Georgia's offense on first team. Nobody. Nobody's talking about Lamont Gilliard, the center. Everybody's got the Alabama center better. Why? Now, Cole Kubelik, who watches the lineman who played center, SEC Network, he says Gilliard's the best returning center. But why is it the Alabama guy? I'll tell you why. The same reason that Jalen Hurts was wrongly named the SEC Offensive Player of the Year 2 years ago over Josh Dobbs. There's no way he was a better player than Josh Dobbs. But everybody, oh, but look at the offense he was a part of. I said, well, then what the heck? Let's just make the whole first team all SEC Alabama then, okay? Because that's the mentality we're dealing with here. Oh, if it's Alabama, it's got to be the best. And you know what? To Alabama's credit, they've won the championships. All right, they got the rings, but you go back and watch that title game, Georgia was the better team. We know that. We can point to missed calls. We can point to a breakdown, you know, saying we got a breakdown on the final. That's coaching. That goes into the mix. But Georgia was the best team in college football last year. They didn't win the national championship, but they were the best team in college. I'll tell you this, Michigan State was the best team in college basketball last year, but they didn't win their tournament. This is a tournament game now. And, you know, that's why I get back to my whole argument about you should have to win your conference championship. Georgia earned it. They were the best team in the SEC last year. They were the SEC champion. And so there shouldn't have been another SEC team in the college football playoff if you can only have four teams, especially when a Big Ten champ was left at home. But back to my point, I don't think Georgia's getting the respect they deserve. I think everybody loves Will Muschamp. Media law, oh, he's a great quote. He's so fiery. Watch him on the sidelines. He must be good because he tears his headset off and acts like a crazy man. You know what? Let's just see what the scoreboard says. But for right now, like you said, it's good hype. It's an early SEC game. People desperately want somebody to be able to challenge Georgia in the East. You know, we're going to hear that it's South Carolina, and after Georgia beats them by 3 touchdowns, we're going to hear it's somebody else. Oh, now it's really Missouri. No. Florida's the team. Now, look out for it's always going to be somebody, Brandon. Until Georgia gets the bright, shiny ring, nobody's going to believe.
I'm intrigued to get your thoughts on Georgia's quarterback competition right now, or to the extent that it even is a quarterback competition. I mentioned to Chip Towers on Monday, I find it interesting that when Kirby Smart talks about these guys, he sort of lumps them into the same breath. Both Fromm and Fields got praise after the first scrimmage. Both Fromm and Fields seem to get a bit of criticism from Kirby Smart after the second scrimmage. We haven't really heard much in the way of individual evaluations from Kirby. Here's what Fromm does well. Here's what he needs to work on. Here's what Fields does well. Here's what he needs to work on. So far, it seems to be sort of blanket statements that encompass both quarterbacks. A, have you noticed that? B, what do you make of that? And C, you know, you saw the open practice. You've seen a little bit, you know, of the other practices. You hear whispers around Athens. What do you make of what's going on right now between Fromm and Fields?
Well, I mean, Kirby's managing the quarterback situation. I mean, that's why Jake Fromm hasn't talked to the media. It's not because he can't handle an interview. It's not because he might say the wrong thing. It's because Kirby wants to be sensitive to Justin Fields and his father and not upset them. You know, you never know what interview they might do next or what story might come out next. So he's managing the quarterbacks as well as he can. It's a balanced competition. He's making sure that everybody knows this is a very fair and even competition, to the point that he's prevented Jake from talking to the media and probably hurt Jake's chances for awards, because Jake's not getting any preseason talk or any preseason hype. And part of that is because he's in a quarterback competition. Now, realistically, I think what Kirby's doing in the long term is smart for the team, and I think it is a team-first thing. I think this team is dialed in, looking to win a championship. I don't think they're worried about individual awards. I think everybody really is all in at Georgia. I think that championship game loss has been quite a motivator for this program. So I think Kirby's managing his club, and I think he's very careful what he says about both. Now, Jake Fromm has got a season under his belt. The offense can do so many more things with him back there. He has a great complementary cast. I would compare it to this. When you look at a championship basketball team, for example, what do you really need your point guard to do? Well, different teams need more from their point guard than others. Right now, I think Jake Fromm is fine being a distributor of the ball. He is capable of being a playmaker. We've seen him run the ball. Now, Fields, Now, here's a guy that can do a lot more, but does Georgia really need him to? And here's the other question Jim Cheney brought up. Do you really want him to? And this is what I mean by that. You've only got two scholarship quarterbacks. If you try and use Fields in some wildcat package and he gets hurt and he hurts his leg, all of a sudden now you don't have a scholarship backup quarterback. So you don't want him running around out there necessarily. You've got to protect both of these quarterbacks. And so I think we'll see Justin Fields play. I think we'll see him play regularly. To what extent, I don't know. Obviously, the objective is to win the game. Right now, Jake Fromm gives you the best chance. But in the meantime, you will see Justin Fields groomed and worked into this offense, I believe, much like the way Florida worked Tim Tebow into the Gators offense some 12 years ago.
I think that's really interesting stuff, Mike. Let me finish up with one quick final question, if you don't mind. And this is kind of deep in the weeds a little bit. But I think, you know, one of the things I thought that Kirby Smart said on Saturday that was really interesting is, you know, they're trying Malik Herring, who was an elite recruit from 2017, at outside linebacker a bit, even though his traditional position is defensive line. He may play there the most, but he's experimenting with him some as an outside linebacker. But in the midst of talking about that, Mike, he also said something else Kirby did that I thought was really interesting, that Jonathan Ledbetter, who I think you would agree is one of this team's true leaders, both off the field and with his play on the field, it sounds like Ledbetter's not going to do any more cross-training. He's not going to slide back and play any outside linebacker. He's going to stay, I think, mostly probably, I guess, at that five technique, sort of a true 3-4 defensive end. To me, I took that as incredibly good news from the perspective of Georgia fans here, because I think if Ledbetter's your true defensive end, along with, like, say, Tyler Clark in that starting role, Julian Rochester kind of in that, you know, other sort of defensive tackle type role, that's a pretty good 3-4 front there. And it doesn't get a lot of attention, and it's sort of a minor point maybe, but Ledbetter sort of staying at defensive end, staying at that kind of five technique position, I think that's good news for Georgia. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, obviously, you know, I mean, anytime a guy, you know, can spell, it tells you how much confidence Georgia has in the other outside linebackers. And I think also that we, you know, and we're still, you know, football is such a great game because it evolves constantly with formations and packages. And, you know, now that we're seeing offenses with so many different packages, I think we're starting to see defenses catch up with packages. And, you know, by keeping Ledbetter there, he's on the field more, I think, and you're not asking him to do too much. I do think Georgia will have a number of different defensive packages. They've got a lot of different types of linebackers. You can look at them. You can see some guys are 218 and some are 245 on the inside. And when is this guy in and when is that guy in? And it's going to depend on who they play and what the package is and what the down and distance is. And Georgia has so much talent now, they can line up, and they can line up heavy. If you play a power run team, a pro-style attack, or they can go light. You know, you're going to face some spread teams, and the Bulldogs have some answers there. But I think Ledbetter will be a consistent. I think he'll probably play more snaps on the defensive line than anybody else, and I think by staying at his position, I think this will enable him to do that.
Yeah, Mike, I love your coverage of DogNation.com. It is so much fun to read. Mike, as you know, there's so many of us out there who are just waiting on pins and needles for the start of the 2018 season. But when you bring us the coverage like you're bringing at DogNation.com, it helps us pass the time. We greatly appreciate that. Looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. And just thanks so much for your time. And we'll talk to you soon right here on Dog Nation Daily.
Yeah, you heard what I had to say about James Cook. I put a story up. You can read for yourself and see what Swift and Holyfield and Monty Rice and DeAndre Walker said about this guy. And I got that high school film in there, too. I'm going to go back to watching those highlights, because this guy's unbelievable.
Mike, I can't wait to read it. Thanks for the promotion there for that. We'll look forward to checking that out at DogNation.com.
You bet.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I do love Mike Griffith, man. He is energy personified. You may not agree with every one of his takes. Obviously, you know, from time to time, you know, big personalities like that, we're going to weigh in on different sides of subjects. Boy, he is all over the place when it comes to this Georgia coverage, the video stuff. I mean, when you click into a Mike Griffith story at DogNation.com, you can pretty much count on seeing some really good video there, including the two running backs that spoke yesterday. He gets in and he gets you up close and personal. You feel like you're in that locker room after practice with Mike Griffith's coverage at DogNation.com. That is what I really like about it. Of course, he'll be a part of our Dog Nation season kickoff tomorrow from the Kroger there incoming on Bethelview Road from 6 to 8 p.m. I'll be giving away T-shirts. We'll have a special off-air conversation. A lot of fun with the entire cast there from my Dog Nation. And speaking of Kroger, right now, they've got a great thing going on. They've got a wine sale at your local Atlanta Kroger. It's just 5 days. It starts today through August 26th. And you can save 10% when you purchase six or more bottles of wine with your card. So check out your local Atlanta Kroger for that. Let's do our SEC through here just for a moment. And so a story that I've only now just become aware of, I guess it's been bubbling here for the last, you know, half day or something like that. A player named Santonio Markiel decided to transfer from Texas A&M. He's going to, I believe it's Arizona. Is that correct? That's where Markiel was looking to go. And in his transfer sort of petition for eligibility, made some pretty interesting accusations against Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M about players getting money to host other players on unofficial visits. Now, official visits are paid for by the university. A lot of times when you host a player for an official visit, you get your, you know, trip paid for there as well, to dinner, you know, going hunting, going, you know, fishing, you know, whatever ends up going on. You know, that's kind of the I guess the perk of hosting an official visit. Unofficial visits are supposed to be on the dime of the prospect, so there's a little bit of an issue there with that. Also an accusation, and it's Dan Wolk in USA Today that sort of reports on this first, but the other accusation that's out there is that Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M were exceeding the 20-hour limit for the work week for the student-athletes. I'm not particularly scandalized by either one of these points. I am not of the belief that really anyone's adhering to the 20-hour work week. That seems almost impossible to be big-time college football at a sort of part-time commitment. That seems very, very difficult to do. So the 20-hour work week's never been that big of a deal to me anyway. As far as guys getting a little extra money to do unofficial visits, if that did happen, I mean, are we really going to act like that's a big deal here in 2018? Neither of these are particularly big issues. I guess the process of this, though, has been somewhat fascinating for some of the college football media. The fact that this comes to light in a transfer petition request for immediate eligibility, this is a venue and a vehicle that's sort of available to some of these players as a way of explaining why they should be immediately eligible to having to sit out a year. And, you know, maybe accidentally here a prospect sort of discovered a way to kind of air a grievance with a coach if he does have it. We're in kind of an interesting age here for college football. And, you know, I think there are probably some in the media that kind of enjoy maybe going after Jimbo on something like this. This will probably get a lot of coverage because, you know, Jimbo Fisher's just sort of an interesting guy to kind of, you know, put up in a story like this. But kind of, you know, the Jimbo Fisher still hasn't coached a game at Texas A&M. It seems like he's already been there 5 years. Given all the hype of the spring, pretty good recruiting for the 2019 class, and now his first semi, at least, whiff of scandal here. It seems like he's been at Texas A&M for a decade, and he still hasn't coached a game yet. That's all pretty fascinating. Florida's got its quarterback competition going on right now, and Felipe Franks, what I think of as the presumed starter there, had kind of some weird comments yesterday. And, you know, listen, I'm the ultimate Gator hater. We have some Florida fans who watch the show from time to time. They still give me a lot of grief about being a Gator hater. Here is one moment, though, where as much as I'd love to, like, sort of poke fun at Felipe Franks, I actually sort of feel sorry for him a little bit, because the quote that he gives is that he's not worried about being the starting quarterback. He's not even thinking about that right now. He doesn't care if he's the starter. I think what he's trying to do is sort of give you the coach speak / player speak answer, where you say, all we're worried about is just competition, blah, 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 blah. We're not even thinking about who the starter is. It ends up sort of coming across making him sound a bit too passive, as if he truly does not care. I don't think half these players mean the stuff they say anyway. You see the quote if you're watching on the screen. He says, I'm not worried about who the starter is, to be honest. I could care less. That's Felipe Franks. It's quoted by the Tampa Bay, the TampaBay.com there. I don't think Franks meant what he said, but it certainly comes across weird. The other thing that Franks sort of says that's actually kind of weird is that he has spent this summer, according to some other published reports, he says, learning to be a, quote, game manager. And really, in a way, that's going to bother some Florida fans more than him saying that he doesn't care if he's the starting quarterback or not. Because, I mean, surely Franks must know that game manager is one of the worst backhanded compliments you can give to a quarterback here. I think, you know, candidly, Franks sort of top-level performance might be game manager status, but it's still not a compliment for a quarterback to be sort of thought of that way. I do think that this is just another example of what I think of as a real mess, that Florida quarterback situation. And Mullen, boy, he is the darling of many in the media. They treat him like some sort of quarterback whisperer. But I don't know that these quarterbacks can necessarily be whispered to. After all, He found Nick Fitzgerald. He brought Nick Fitzgerald to a Mississippi State. He found Dak Prescott. You know, he recruited that guy. These are prospects that he picked out. In the case of what's at Florida, these are prospects, with the exception of Emory Jones, that he's sort of having to salvage based on what happened under the Jim McElwain watch. And I don't think it's going to be that simple for Dan Mullen when it comes to these Florida quarterbacks. Speaking of quarterbacks, one more story here for our SEC through. Nick Saban updates his quarterback situation. And, you know, much like Kirby Smart has sort of lumped his quarterbacks together when he speaks, Saban does that recently here when it comes to both Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa, saying they're both competing, blah, 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 blah. But in the midst of talking about these quarterbacks, he does use a phrase that I think is almost certainly used intentionally about there being, quote, a role for both. Now, Saban doesn't expand too much on what he means by that, but I don't think I'm taking too many liberties by making an assumption here that he's talking about Tua Tagovailoa as the starting quarterback and Jalen Hurts as some sort of run-only option or a guy that maybe plays another position. Now, I've suggested before that the way that Hurts has been treated recently by Alabama and Saban makes it seem like, you know, like the old school idea of processing a recruit out of a signing class or a player out of the program. You know, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say it sometimes feels like, you know, Hurts is not wrong for thinking he's not completely wanted Alabama. Maybe this is another example of maybe how Hurts could take it that way. That's obviously my opinion. But kind of interesting that Saban used that language, role for both, which would certainly suggest something for one of these guys as something other than starting quarterback. It seems reasonable to assume that's Jalen Hurts. So interesting language being used by Nick Saban, as this is about as controversial we've ever seen a player issue involving Saban since he's been in Alabama. Most of this stuff is kept quiet, but this is very much sort of appeared on the surface. Different for Saban. We'll see where it goes from here. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, I actually want to, for a couple of minutes, go back to something that Mike Griffith was talking about when he was on the program this, a moment ago. And I kind of alluded to this then, that, you know, there are a lot of big personalities around Dog Nation right now who have a lot of institutional knowledge, whether it be Chip Towers in his deep knowledge of Georgia going back years and years and years, Mike Griffith in his deep knowledge of college football in general going back years and years, Jeff's expertise in the recruiting scene, me kind of, you know, doing what I've done for the time that I've been doing it here on a Dog Nation Daily, not shy about giving opinions. There are going to be a lot of opinions expressed around Dog Nation, and not every opinion is going to be the exact same way when it comes to all of this stuff. I think an example of that is Zamir White. You know, Mike was talking about how he wasn't so sure that Zamir White was going to be one of Georgia's best running backs here this season. It sounds like Mike, based on what he's hearing from Georgia practice, is very high on the other freshman running back, James Cook, right now. And, you know, I can certainly understand where Mike's coming from on that. I have also heard some of those same players say some of those same things about how excited they are about the role that James Cook might be able to have for UGA. But I still think it's important to point out here, and we'll take some of your comments on this on video, or if you want to weigh into me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily, you can have a chance to do that there as well. I still think it's important to kind of point out here that I believe that if Zamir White was healthy, I believe that he was just setting up for a pretty special season. And I understand why you know, you might have an opinion contrary to that. I sort of get where that comes from in some regard. But I do think, while Georgia may eventually be fine, and Georgia may eventually bounce back and be okay on the heels of that injury, Zamir White likely will be fine as a program. I still think it's important to note that when White went down, that was a significant playmaker subtracted from the Georgia equation here. And so when you think about the upcoming season and you think about, you know, close games for Georgia, and frankly, Georgia may not play a lot of close games here this season. You may not see a close game for Georgia until October when it goes on the road to LSU. And you may not see another close game for Georgia until the next month in November when Auburn comes to Athens. And, you know, maybe the SEC championship and then maybe the college football playoff beyond that. You may not see a lot of close games for Georgia, but in close games, there are pivotal moments. I think of 3rd and 5 as an example. 3rd and 5 is one of those plays where you want to be able to call on your most dynamic playmaker, and you want to call on the most likely play to be successful in your playbook. When I thought about those moments a lot during the offseason, I pictured Zamir White in that spot, and now it won't be Zamir, and eventually he'll be back healthy probably and doing all the things we dreamed of him doing in a Georgia uniform. But for 2018, Georgia got to find somebody different to do some of that kind of stuff. And I do think watching that play out and finding who steps up and emerges, it's both going to be very fun and entertaining to see it all play out, but it's also another crucial question facing UGA. All right, so we'll wrap up here today. Of course, we believe on this program that a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost. That's why we're excited about 66 days from right now, the Gator Hater Countdown. We look forward to going to Jacksonville and seeing those Georgia Bulldogs beat up on those lousy, stinking Gators again right here on a Dog Nation Daily. Let me also say this. Very special thanks to the Augusta Bulldog Club last night, who had us there, myself, Jeff Sintel. What a great time that was. Matt Stinchcomb was honored with the Lauren Smith Award by the Augusta Bulldog Club last night. Matt gave a great speech. Lauren Smith gave a great speech. Had a chance to hang out with some great, great dog fans and former Georgia players. Just a great room last night there in Augusta for the Augusta Bulldog Club, the annual meeting there. And you better believe, right there on the Georgia-South Carolina border, they are thrilled about seeing the Dogs beat up on the Gamecocks coming up in a couple weeks. I'm also thrilled about seeing you tomorrow night, 6 p.m. at the Kroger and Cumming for our Dog Nation season kickoff. Hope to see you there, and then tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.